We're recording on the lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people, and we acknowledge them as traditional owners. We'd also like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Midnight to midnight. Welcome. Screening. Welcome to midnight screening. Welcome to screening. Welcome to midnight screening. I am screaming. I am screaming. I am screaming.
Welcome to Midnight Screening, where we let you stay up past your bedtime with the movies you probably shouldn't be watching.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Noah Jansen, my brother.
Hello, Eliza Jansen, my sister.
Hello, Anthony. Hanging out over here. How you doing?
Hi. Yeah, not too bad also.
Great.
Hello. Go team.
Woo! Today is an exciting, momentous, even monstrous occasion.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Because we're kicking off a marathon the likes of which we have never done before. It's typically true. We cover six movies in our Midnight Marathon series.
Mm-hmm.
We will watch them over the course of a few weeks.
We'll give ourselves some time, you know. Maybe it would be, oh, it's getting late. You check your clock. It's like 10 o'clock or something. Oh, it's time to go to bed.
Not so this time.
No.
I'm shaking my head. No. This time we had the delightful chance to check out six random Godzilla movies as part of MIFF's programming. They had a Godzilla marathon just as we were starting to say, oh my God, we should do a Godzilla season on the podcast.
It's obviously with this pod, like, exciting and overwhelming that there's so much stuff we want to do. And one of the things I think when we started the show, we said one of the first marathons we were going to do was going to be Godzilla. Mm. And then we saw Godzilla X Kong, the new Empire, and we were like, we'll do it soon.
Save it for when we do the marathon.
The lovely people at MIFF, they felt it in the waters and they were like, let's do a freaking marathon.
To make clear what this was, a few weeks ago, we arrived at St Kilda's Astor Theatre at 8:30 at night and then watched 699 minutes of Godzilla movies with little breaks in between, but still, oh my God.
I kept on having to double check the length of time because it doesn't feel like 699 minutes should equate. That feels like if I just saw it flat on a piece of paper, that feels like it's like 3 days, but it's not. It's seven films?
Seven films.
Ridiculous, ridiculous amount. Now, we do have a bit of history with, like, we love, I would say the Astor is my favorite place in Melbourne, but also some of my favorite movie watching experiences are going to overnight marathons.
There's spookathons
at the Astor, particularly the spooktaculars around Halloween.
Is it spooktaculars? Spookathons?
Spookathons. Okay. It's true. It's the spookathons. I feel it doesn't have to be a spookathon, but every year now for about 4 years, I feel like we've done one, haven't we?
Yeah.
Just not COVID years, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, we have our methods. We would bring very thin single bed mattresses with us and giant bags.
You find a spot to, like, camp out, I guess.
Mm.
And, like,
this was our most versatile marathon performance, I think.
What do you mean? We raced around a lot and
moved around. And just because we were kind of trying to, again, we were like, let's, now that we have this little avenue to talk to the people and hopefully some people who went to the festival are listening now, we were like, let's actually sort of like try to integrate the show with the experience of the marathon.
That's true. You'll hear later throughout the next couple episodes some of the Godzilla heads that we talked to.
Exactly.
What they were feeling.
And I think it really suited what Godzilla is, like, the community of Godzilla. I'm so glad my first, like, real experience of Godzilla got to be in this real, like, communal energy. Mm. Like, the marathons are always fun. Like, they're always obviously people really getting around it or whatever. But I have to say, in terms of, like, audience vibe, this was my favorite. Where, like, there are films that of the six that we watched that were elevated so much because I was like, I cannot imagine a better way of watching this. And even just as a franchise, like what we're going to be talking about, obviously, in our Midnight Marathons is like, we want to give you a lot of context of like the history of, you know, whatever it is, in this case, this franchise. And just that, like, what other, it's the longest running film franchise.
I was going to say.
Other franchise has this much different, like, style and tone. Like, in those seven films, we went around the world.
Yeah,
you know?
Everyone had, like, a additional, like, accessory genre that it was also, like, ticking off.
Yes,
I'm glad that if we're going to do cover a franchise, like, we could have done, like, a Halloween season or something, but I'm glad if we're doing one, it is literally the longest running film franchise in history. There's, like, 33 yes. Godzilla movies.
Yeah, literally. And I do think kudos to MIFF because the six films, like...
It was good programming.
I think that they were really good little vibe. Like, every one of them, by the time we get to part three, you'll hear, like... We will have talked about like what are all of the little subgenres you can pick from these six films?
Oh my God. Like, there's like spy movie. There's like alien sci-fi.
Family adventure.
Yes.
There's, yeah, the spy one, the sort of like martial arts.
Yeah.
Kick. There's obviously like bureaucratic.
Yeah, like war
legal
movie.
Drama, war movie. It really, it does it all. That little guy has really gotten
little
around.
Guy? Who you call it little? Do you think he ever said that? Smush. I know.
I'm sure every minutes. Time he's screaming, he's just trying to be heard.
He's just saying, I'm big. I'm so big. Please look at me.
Every time.
I don't think he's insecure. What do you think of him? We'll keep checking in on this, but.
This is one of the things, like the kind of questions that I felt like asking people at the marathon, especially when everyone was really exhausted and tired. I was like, I feel like we'll get punched if it's like 4 a.m. and then someone asks
like,
you.
So you like Godzilla? They're like flying to a rage.
Well, something like that. Well, I kind of wanted to be like, how is your, like, how do you think his soul is when he's breaking things? Like, or like, do you think, if he had a companion, they would work together to destroy things. Or
well,
do you
we have
think-
seen that that is the case. Yes.
Have we?
Yeah, what do you mean? He teams up with other monsters all the time.
I don't mean companion in that way.
You mean girlfriend?
Yeah.
Or boyfriend. Or
exactly.
Yeah,
hey.
Partner, sorry.
Actually, no, what about that question, huh?
Yeah.
What do you think? We were talking about a she-Godzilla, like the idea of like a Godzilla with like
I think her name should be Godzilla.
Like red lipstick and high heels. And
Girlzilla
stuff.
Or Godzilla.
Or you could go because I'm obviously picturing from Gremlins 2 the
yeah,
new batch.
Greta.
And she just isn't called, you know, she hasn't her own name. It doesn't need to be like she-Godzilla or something.
Yeah, oh, that's kind
of
funny.
Kind of offensive. She can be her own lizard monster.
Godzilla-s.
Godzilla-s.
Godzilla.
Godzilla.
That's it. Yeah. Thank you. Glad you're here. That's
why
I needed.
Pay me the big bucks.
Exactly. I needed you to say it, not me. Truly.
A funny thing is I could have mentioned this at the very, very end of this whole thing, but did you know the most recent Godzilla movie, minus one, which we're not covering, but hopefully we'll get around to at some point in the podcast future. Around the time that was coming out, Toho put together a Godzilla room. Have you heard about this?
Is it where you get to put on the suit and stop
No,
around?
I'm so sorry to disappoint you.
Oh, I thought it would be that.
It's
That's
just a
good
room full
model.
Of Godzilla fans. It's like 14 super fans and they united these people together, like the UN of Godzilla, and they had developed a set of rules for the character that they're like going forward. No filmmaker because their filmmaking team, ever since Ishiro Honda, who directed the very, very first Godzilla, ever since his passing and even a bit during that period, the movies are always directed by like a new team or whatever, but always under Toho. They have these standards of the behavior that Godzilla can and cannot do.
Wow.
And one of the biggest ones to me where I'm like, oh yeah, that's so true, is he cannot ever attack a thing or person. He can't, it's never personal.
It's always like collateral to, it's like a force of nature, truly.
He could kill like a crowd, but he couldn't be like, that guy.
Which is the main.
And like go and atomic breath one man.
Which is like an awesome rule to put in place because that is the sort of thing that like when a franchise gets lazy, it does something like that. I feel like that's the main thing we'll be talking about with this franchise as well is like a lot of things come and go with it as we talked about between films, but there is something about a giant monster that usually feels like just, you know, it could be a placeholder for any monster, you know, but there is such a like unspoken sense of how
they respect every person His Majesty.
Relates to Godzilla that gives them so much identity that you're like, what other like nameless for it, it's like looking at a tsunami and being like, oh, you little guy, like I'm so proud of you, you know what I mean, like why do we love him so much?
We have to get into it.
We do,
but first of all, oh my god, don't start yet. I have something I want to offer the listener, okay? Something free that you can enjoy.
Right? Oh my god, free things.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm trying to solve a pain point that everyone has, particularly if you watch a lot of movies and stuff. And if you listen to this podcast, you probably do. So, you know, when someone says, oh, what have you been watching lately? Like, oh, have you seen anything good?
Mm-hmm.
And your mind goes completely, completely blank.
Yeah, empty.
And you're like, oh my God, I saw like something on a plane 10 months ago, I think.
No, whatever. It's so like, true. When you're like, I watch movies a dangerous amount of time and someone brings up like what movies you like.
You're like,
and
suddenly, oh,
I can't remember anything.
I have something to offer.
Yeah.
From now on, whenever this situation happens to you, mention whatever shit we have watched and be like, you have our permission to say, oh, my friends were telling me about
that is, you know, such
my
a
friends
good
were telling me
idea.
About Trap, about The Wicker Man.
That's such
and
a good idea.
I'm doing this like only out of the goodness of my heart. I'm not doing this to promote our Patreon or podcast at all. But like, then they'll be like, oh, what friends? And you can say, oh, they actually talked about it on their podcast too. It's called Midnight Screening. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. They actually have a Patreon that's really reasonably priced and you get extra content there. And then your friend will pick you up on their shoulders and they'll tour you around the city, I reckon.
This is for the measly cost of $5 a month. You get to escape any sort of social anxiety, awkward situation from now until the day you die.
You can, I also don't care if you're like, you haven't seen the movie and you just want some clout and you can just steal some of our crazy
also,
foolish opinions and be like, I just personally, this is just me, I think that blah, 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 blah.
Push
like,
all of our hot takes.
Go for it. I don't
exactly.
care.
I also am comfortable if you want to like make up shit, like say it's not received well. Say you're like, you peddle one of our opinions.
Yeah.
And then they are like, the fuck, that's dumb. We give you permission to be like, oh, no, I hate that friend.
Like, you can be like, they're actually in jail. Don't
we're falling out of favor. Exactly. Yeah, that they're in jail. Or like they got
but
really-
don't unsubscribe.
They got really weird out of high school. But then you just have to, you have to give. You know, this is just the I think you should leave skit, the you've got to give one.
You gotta give.
This is just the I think you should leave skit where a guy has a piss dot on his pants and then he's like, oh no, he's just wearing the pants that have a dot on them and then he's told
I don't like that sketch
website.
So much, I must say. It drags on a little for
it
me.
It goes for like 15 minutes. Yeah.
It's nice to be retroactively given permission to do the thing that I've been doing since this podcast started.
Wow.
See? And does it work for you? Do people cheer you and give you a big high five?
Well, you're the coolest dude I know, so clearly.
Yeah, pretty much.
All the social capital we've given you. What happens, Eliza, though, when we become the biggest show ever and suddenly everyone's way cooler than us? Imagine if the key to world peace is two people sacrificing themselves to be the lame friends that get blamed for everyone's taste.
That's what happened to Christ.
Like on the cross, yeah.
You know.
It is the modern crucifix.
He still has a following.
Is having
been crucified for your taste.
Yeah, for your taste.
Yeah, like popularity comes in waves, you know. It's like it'll dip and then it'll come back and be bigger than this first time. And
yeah.
I think so. Eliza, that's such a good idea. That's great.
It's just for you, listener. Like,
oh, wait, what would we get out of that? Exactly.
I'm not thinking about us and whatever we get from it.
We know it's tough out there on those streets, so you gotta take care of yourself. Yeah, if you do that, just shout us out.
Yeah.
So here are some opinions on Godzilla 1954 that you can peddle as your own.
Yeah, remember these verbatim.
Take
we're
notes.
Talking about Godzilla 1954.
Thank you.
1954, a little goober flopped out of the ocean, much like how humanity was birthed all those majillions of years ago. Mm. And his name was Gojira, derived from Gorira and Kojira, which is gorilla and whale.
Wow.
Do you know that?
No.
Do you think he's like a gorilla whale?
No, I think he's like a big lizard.
Yeah, I know, huh?
Yeah.
Very weird.
But great name. Honestly, when you find Godzilla,
it's like God is in there. And then the Zilla is so weird.
And as I was watching this really beautiful, very deeply affecting film, I was also thinking about like, imagine creating a character that spawns random other affiliations like that you put, you know, Bridezilla and stuff like that. Like you put a random word for Zilla. That's so
You're being
wild.
A real Noahzilla right now.
You're being a real Noahzilla right now.
I mean, it's also like Godzilla himself is like a testament to how sort of like interpolating or doing like a sequel or a ripoff can so become its own thing, because he's really directly inspired by King Kong, which was huge for like basically 20 to 30 years before Godzilla existed.
Totally. And oh gosh, there's just so many comparisons to be made with. Again, I think maybe this film is the best one to talk about, like the actual personality we attach to Godzilla, because it really plants a root that goes throughout even the sillier films.
It's
all the
so
more fun.
Fertile.
Yeah, exactly. Which is like, you know, when I think of King Kong, I think about that like empathy being built between the idea of something that is, you know, monstrous and you know, otherworldly and very much the other, but that is actually as intimate to you as like, you know, someone on the street that just looks scared and needs help. Like every single King Kong storyline is, you know, like an
Ultimately,
innocent.
Ultimately, he's just monkey.
Yeah, who like, you know, like wants love or wants a hug or wants, you know, love and affection from like, you know, some like, you know, in every King Kong movie, there's like one woman that's like, no, don't kill him, that sort of thing. And Godzilla creates the same feeling, but from the exact opposite idea, which is this thing happening is terrible. And also no one points the stupid people who reflect the ideas that create a Godzilla or make Godzilla rise again are the people who view him as to blame. Otherwise, what is so powerful and upsetting about Godzilla as an idea is that it is more like about, you know, a natural disaster or about the consequences of your actions.
Like, I mean, very directly, the atomic bomb.
Yes, absolutely.
Is his whole deal.
Yeah. So the film itself.
I don't know if anyone else picked up on that, but like that might be what's going on here.
I think it's a little bit of sort of like atomic nuclear fear and paranoia.
Go on Wikipedia, type in Japan, go back to 1940s and just like do some research. Do some, do your own research.
And just like obviously all of cinema is full of this, but an entire longest running franchise ever being based off what really is like a cultural reckon. We talk a lot on this show about horror as like directors or communities exercising personal fears through like an allegory, you know.
Or cultural anxiety or whatever.
A cultural anxiety. And just that idea of like, you know, not that I'm saying it's a subtle film, like there's actually very beautiful, directly poignant moments where you're thinking about Oppenheimer the whole time. Like we'll talk about this amazing character that gets introduced halfway through, but like the main function of the film is still like governments managing a crisis, but it's about, again, it's Godzilla not as like an entity that has it out to kill people. It's a literal
force of nature
that's, you are reaping what you've sowed, because he is brought out of hiding because of the use of nuclear weapons, because of the atomic bombs.
Yeah. It's funny seeing, because obviously this is their first crack at creating this law. It's funny the bits that you notice that are missing. Like the first time we hear the name Godzilla spoken, it's this like kooky fisherman guy in some village that when they're all catastrophizing about, oh my God, our fish might be contaminated with nuclear waste, which is something that in the very year the film was being made was an anxiety around Japan. This kooky old man is saying that Godzilla is like a character, a figure from prehistory, and he's like an old legend or something. And you're like,
yeah,
huh? When was he made? Like, it's still kept mysterious. And then later on, the scientists that are trying to tackle Godzilla, they mention that he's coming to land to eat people. Or they say like he's here for fuel, but it's not atomic fuel or something. And like in every other movie, I feel like they're like, he needs to charge up. He needs our nuclear power. Yeah. But they do call him a child of the H-bomb in the film script.
Yeah, interesting. It's very true that I think, well, firstly, we should say, like, what is your experience with Godzilla? I feel like you know him a lot better than me. And I was really excited to do this season because I was like, oh, I feel very much classic, like, westernized viewing thing of like my experience with Godzilla.
Is Monsterverse movies.
The Monsterverse stuff, like the new ones. I really like, I think, the version of Godzilla that, well, again, we'll talk about it. It's different movies for different vibes, but this one, The Return of Godzilla and Gareth Edwards, like American Godzilla in like 2014 or whatever it is, I really enjoy that idea of like, the tension is always in the bureaucracy being like making you like clench your fists and like roll your eyes and want to scream at the screen. Yeah. And then visually the tension is in like building up the idea that he is coming. Like that's always so, I was so impressed that right off the bat, the movie, because as you said, I think at first I was like, oh, it's not like the origin of Godzilla or anything. It is like this idea of a myth or a legend, but it still does visually build the idea of like you are, you know, the camera is peering down at people and like in the middle of their house that's been completely destroyed and you're witnessing them see Godzilla before you have seen him. And just right off the bat, it's like, yeah, it's more this idea of how we, again, talk about, in Australia, how we talk about like a bushfire where you're like, we all know that's a thing that could happen.
How do you live with this?
Because of the choices that get made. So, you know, you have, you know, your grandparents who are like, Godzilla will come again, those sort of things. It's not just saying this monster has arrived today, you know?
Yeah. I mean, to answer your question you briefly brought up, I don't think I've seen that many more Godzilla movies. I've seen Shin Godzilla and Minus One, which I don't think you've seen yet.
No.
But apart from that, this marathon was like, you know, pocket education in Godzilla. Like there's so much I didn't know about him. I think when we're talking about, you were mentioning like Godzilla versus Kong in terms of like how relatable or how human he is.
Yeah.
And originally Honda and Toho were working with an Indonesian film studio and trying to get a movie made about a giant octopus that was also going to represent the atomic bomb.
Mm.
And like an octopus just would not have hit in the same way as like what Godzilla is, which is like, we keep calling him a lizard, but he's bipedal. He has arms that he picks stuff up with. He has pretty human looking eyes.
Mm.
And so to me, more than like a lizard or whatever, I feel like he is like a giant man, which is terrifying enough. But like de-evolved back into a lizard brain state.
Yeah, and I think totally.
That like just from creature design or whatever, that has such strong kind of ramifications suggesting that like the cruelty involved to do something like the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki or whatever, it's like that's not a human mind. That's like some prehistoric former brain that we had before we developed empathy and like higher order thinking. Like,
I don't know.
So much you can read into how he looks and
absolutely
how he acts.
And equally off the back of that, I was going to say that classic thing in horror of films made on like, you know, the restraints of practically making something, creating iconic elements. In this case, that they didn't have the money to do stop motion like King Kong did. So it is the first case of a man in a suit.
Miniatures.
And like stomping on miniatures, which is just so effective and like not silly at all.
I think the black and white is very forgiving as well. Like it looks more convincing in this movie than some of the color ones that came later.
It really has that thing of like a film that, I don't think this wouldn't have been the case when it came out, but especially now, like all the footage you're watching has this sort of archival element that it doesn't feel like this giant monster rampaging feels incongruent with images of Hiroshima or images from, you know, the wars that happened before we were born.
That's
where you're like
really correct, because yeah. Honda was a really weird pick to direct the movie. The only his first movie that he made, like 2 years before Godzilla, it was like semi-documentary, and it's about like pearl divers. And he'd come from making like documentaries and like short war features. So he'd come from that background, and to have someone like that doing a movie about a monster stomping on everybody, like, it paid off.
Again, like, I don't know how literally, obviously, I'm not trying to say it's not a film that's directly about Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but just that, like, it's a film that knows it's using this monster as allegory. And then all the other ways in which tone and collective, like, reckoning seep into the film is something that happens kind of unconsciously. Like, I just thought that the actual atmosphere of how the film leaves you feeling is what bowled me over in terms of just the power of film, that like you can make something that has a symbol, like, you know, a character as a symbol that sort of allows you to distance safely from it literally being a film about Hiroshima or Nagasaki, or just about the state of, you know, nuclear war and the constant like precipice of that we dance on. But that, yeah, that you can like, you can still engage with that idea, but in a way that still has an element of the fantasy of film that makes you want to come back for more.
Yeah.
For 70 years, come back for more.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm currently reading this book, Nuclear War, A Scenario, which is about the like extremely thoroughly researched step-by-step process by which the 30 minutes between the button being pressed and the bomb striking, what that would look like.
Damn.
And when listening to it and realizing we were going to do this podcast,
you're like, man, I wish that was Godzilla.
But just
that would be so cool.
that would be so much more gnarly. But just like the like distancing power that a story gives you that actually makes you engage
more
better,
deeply,
if you know what I mean. Like, it actually makes it feel entertaining in a way that doesn't feel insensitive. It allows people to come to that idea together in a way that doesn't feel like it's so traumatic that you're just reliving it or something.
This is a bit of a jump, but like this, well, maybe like topically it's a bit of a jump, but I don't think conceptually it is. It seems like to have a lot to do with, lot in common with the idea of like psychedelic therapy.
I love this jump, totally.
How, like, you know, it's essentially exactly that. Is that like people have like, worst case, people have like really intense traumas that their body basically like has set up kind of like defense mechanisms to prevent them from reliving, so that they can continue to be a person and like to function.
Yes,
and at least exist on like all of these other levels, if not like shutting off like that pathway of their brain or something like that. And so it can be like quite a dangerous thing for you to be sort of like forced back into that pathway without like changing the like way that your brain is going to kind of like receive that or something. But there's this sort of like combination of like lucidity but like depersonalization that can occur with stuff like psychedelics, where you're just like almost able to see yourself from the outside, kind of thing. And you can sort of like address what is actually your own trauma as though it almost like wasn't your own, or as though it was like a kind of academic principle that you were
it's
engaging
so beautiful.
With and you're like, it just kind of unlocks a bunch of things. And yeah, it's like quite incredible. Anyway,
at a base, like preachy level, the genuine ability to use a story to process something. It's crazy.
Yeah, the medicine in the candy.
Yeah.
Godzilla is psychedelic therapy.
Yeah.
100%.
Absolutely.
And
let's
drop. You can tell your friends that that is your own idea.
use that.
Yeah.
Just walk up to someone at a party and say that, and they'll, you know, they'll be into you. It will work, whatever. That's like
it will
the
play.
New pickup.
It definitely will.
Line. Maybe let's talk about a few of the characters quickly, because
I do actually want to talk about this film specifically as well. He's just such he's so great. That's so much to talk about.
So the movie does have some obvious grabs at sentimentality, which is like, I want to see the people that Godzilla is smushing. Mm-hmm. Like, we see a mom holding her kid as Godzilla gets close, and she's like, don't worry, we'll be with daddy soon. And we have the great
train car. The train car is the most
brutal
one.
there's always a train car. All the Godzilla ones, truly. Right, when he's in a city. There's always a train coming and he picks it up and plays with it, which is great. You have the great Takashi Shimura as Dr. Yamane, I think, who Kurosawa fans will know. He's in like Ikiru and a bunch of
It's so funny Kurosawa that I was like, movies. Oh, he's brilliant in Ikiru. And I was like, oh, he's playing the character from Ikiru where, again, we're talking about culturally an inability to talk about a trauma that in this film, it's not a character that walks around saying these things. It's just the idea of all the young people in practical logic mode of the steps we need to do to, and then like, you know, the steps we need to do to stop this or stop Godzilla or, you know, to all live through this or to help society. And then older generations, just someone that like sits and stares at a wall and never explicitly says where they are in their mind. But it's just that character is the feeling of this film, which is this slow dawning of like, we may
how much it's going to take to even begin to take responsibility and do something about this.
Absolutely. And that the world is still the world that created that monster does not go away because the monster does. Like we still live here. We all will live here forever sort of thing. Mm. Sorry, yeah, I cut you off. Amazing character. Really, really
but
amazing character.
I think when you're mentioning Oppenheimer, is the character you were going to talk about early on, Serizawa, the bad boy scientist that creates the oxygen destroyer?
I had not seen this one before. And when Serizawa came in, I was like, has anyone ever brought up that Godzilla's a very, very good film? Like, I was like, that is so brilliant. Because I thought it would do the obvious, like, Oppenheimer parallel in that it's someone being like, you know, some guy that's like, we let Godzilla loose and I feel guilty about it. Like, you know, like, oh, what have we done? But it's actually this character who essentially he is an inventor who has this extremely secret invention that is torturing him. And the invention is an oxygen destroyer, which is like this.
He uses it on a tank of fish early on in front of the main heroine who he's like kind of incel-y about. And like that alone is like, this guy's so doomed. He's not going to be part of the main couple.
No.
And he explodes a bunch of fish in front of her and she's horrified.
It like removes the oxygen. It destroys the oxygen from water. So like these fish instantly turn into skeletons. But instead of, I just really like that idea of like someone in script, I feel like the obvious parallel is to go, oh, we just make an Oppenheimer, but instead it's to write a character that does the like anti-Oppenheimer of being like, I know, like no one is ever going to see this invention. I'm going to go to the grave with it. Mm. I'm only going to use it under the absolute most essential circumstance. And then these people being like, the time is now. Yeah. We need to kill
Godzilla.
This is
literally our last chance. Let us use your oxygen destroyer. And this is how Godzilla is defeated in the movie. He gets turned into a big skeleton, which looks awesome the water. And Serizawa dies with him.
He would rather die.
He burns all of his notes so no one can recreate the weapon again.
And he
sacrifices himself, basically.
And that whole final sequence just made me be like, especially we need to shout out the score by Akira Ifukube. Because that whole third act is something that I feel like in old films, underwater sequences frequently are like violently lacking tension.
Yeah.
And that whole final stretch is the music just makes you feel so like.
It's really like patriotic, like propulsive music.
And just like, but don't you think also like in a way that's quite upsetting because it still is like
a tragic sound to it, yeah.
It's the idea of, again, killing this creature that is just doing that really is just like speaking for Mother Nature, you know? Like there's this idea of being like no one wins in killing Godzilla. So that whole final sequence has this air of like we're putting out this one little fire, but we've, as a humanity, as a race, we've lost. And it just
Yamane
was so upsetting.
Is already doing sequel bait. He's like, something tells me. I don't think he's down for the count. Whatever. You're like, yeah, great.
Which does also introduce, right, that this is that great franchise thing where they don't care too much about canon, right? Because you're like, Godzilla, it's not like every time Godzilla's Godzilla isn't the race and every time one, like, what am I trying to say? When Godzilla died and they're like, something tells me we'll see Godzilla again. I was like, are you implying
he's
that like there's multiple
are
different
you saying
Godzillas?
It's like dichotomy between like reincarnation versus parallel universes, like Godzilla multiverse where they're like they're not existing in the same timeline? Or you're saying?
I think I thought is in, as you said, they didn't know what the lore is yet. Were they thinking Godzilla was just the species? And every time there's a new Godzilla, it's just like, and I'm like, no, Godzilla is one little guy.
Yeah.
With his own personality. You know what
well,
I mean?
I think that's one of Toho's new rules as well, that they're like, you cannot kill him off too definitively.
Yeah.
Like the characters can't say something like, he's never coming back. Da, 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 or anything
yeah.
like.
Yeah.
In minus one, there's the sense that like, even if he's reduced to like a fleck of like one scale, he can regenerate.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always prefer that thing in a franchise where it doesn't get too
leaves
addicted to the logic of, you know, you know how like in Friday the 13th, they're like, and here is how he comes back this time
chapter.
From what happened to him last time. And you're like, yeah. I don't even remember what happened last time.
Yeah.
It can just be that he's back.
I just want to see him again.
But yeah, did you also like think that that character, this like Oppenheimer parallel is such an interesting.
And especially you saying that he is like an Oppenheimer-esque character. I think it would be so funny to watch the American localization of this movie.
Yeah.
Like for how deeply and profoundly connected it is to like then current events in Japan. I think it would be so funny to see changes they made in the US version, like dubbed over what they changed.
Mm. I was going to ask if you knew much about this because I heard that there is a like more Americanized version of it called Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Yeah, I don't know what's changed between them. I know it's worse.
I bet. But as you said, it is so interesting to be like, what does a film like this become when all the allegory, it does the work for it. Like they don't have to really force it in. It just exists in it inherently. Like how would you remove that from it? You know what I mean? Like it literally bleeds through every inch of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it literally just is the film that it is always spoken of as. Like it's exceptional and it accomplishes so much at once.
Yeah.
Again, great courtroomy scenes. There's a great scene where it's, you know, the bureaucracy of talking about whether we should tell
Mr. Prime Minister, I believe he should be studied. What are you talking about?
Yeah. And also like ethically, do we owe the public the truth that this monster
that'll
is back
come
or
back
not?
Awesomely in Return of Godzilla as well.
It will. It definitely will.
For now, we are about to have a massive tonal shift.
Yeah.
And at the MIFS Godzilla marathon, we actually spoke to somebody in the midst of that whole crazy experience. So maybe let's hear from this friendly stranger who loves Godzilla as much as we do. And then we'll be back to talk about Destroy All Monsters.
Wrestling match time.
Yes, ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding.
Was Minus One or Shin Godzilla sort of like a bit of a gateway drug? Or did you watch the original one first? Like where did it start?
I watched the original.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just watched a few random ones. So I watched the Millennium, Godzilla 2000 Millennium. I watched Giant Monsters All Out Attack.
Yeah.
Shin Godzilla, and then I saw Minus One in IMAX when it came out, which was really cool. It's like a really big tonal shift because the first movie we watched is so serious and like heavy, and the next one is just really funny.
That's exactly what I was about to ask. But another film starting.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for chatting. Have a good night.
So, clearly, as we've already talked about a little bit, and as we've just heard, loving this franchise, which has spanned 70 years,
woo,
is to literally go through every single possible hangout vibe with a film you can have. Before we knew that MIFS was going to throw together this wonderful marathon and we were putting together like, you know, of
how do we
films,
get a good spread of
how do we get
the representative Godzilla movies?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, how, and as with every marathon, you know, it's so hard to touch on an entire, you know, genre or character or franchise, whatever it is, in only six films. And there are people who know a lot more about it than us. Mm. We're always sort of doing a sampling platter sort of thing. It was interesting. Like, again, I didn't know as much about Godzilla really. So I really needed the marathon to kind of get initiated. And I was like, okay, so with the first part, we want something that shows the sort of bridge from Godzilla from 54 being this, you know, very dramatic sort of contemplation of, you know, the history of the atomic bombs and what, you know, the effect on the culture that was. And then, like, what's a film like after that? You know, one of the sequels that sort of started to maybe introduce some of the like more fun elements, but still has that root a little bit. And literally, again, we haven't watched all of them, but it doesn't happen until the Return of Godzilla, which we're talking about next week.
Where they're like, whoa, 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 hey now, let's get serious again.
Let's get serious again, because the next film we're talking about is...
The title is Destroy All Monsters.
Destroy All Monsters. It is literally like Whiplash. Watching WWE in the best...
It's like WWE and Thunderbirds. It had such Thunderbirds vibes.
It literally opens on essentially Tracy Island. Yeah. This is the set. Like, the audience was... We've just watched
during Godzilla. They were like reverently silent at the end, clapped.
Exactly. Everyone was like, wow, what a powerful piece of cinema. This film opens and it's fully like...
They're like, welcome to Monsterland.
Welcome to Monsterland. And everyone was whooping and hollering. In this film, humans have achieved world peace.
It's basically set... It's like the... I'm sorry.
It's like an alternate reality. It's a very exciting film to talk about. We both were like, this is going to rip. Essentially, you have to watch this film if you haven't seen it. But make sure you have people with you. You can make a drinking game out of this movie. Yeah. Oh my God.
I'm so intrigued by the premise of it.
It's okay. It opens and it's like humans have achieved world peace. And
it's set in 1999.
It's set in 1999. And they have taken all the monsters, and the monsters live on a place called Monsterland. The like United Nations have established a beautiful island, very Tracy Island-esque from Thunderbirds, that safely keeps all the monsters at bay. So you've got Godzilla's there, Mothra's there, Rodan is there.
Fuck Rodan.
Anguirus and Manila, who we'll talk about a lot.
Son of Godzilla.
All of them are kept at bay inside this beautiful monster island with like little, you know, technological advancements.
What could possibly go wrong?
Suddenly, the safety measures of Monster Island fail and all of the monsters are let loose fully.
Okay, I haven't seen this, but is Manila the son of Godzilla because man is the son of God?
It's Manila, like mini.
Oh.
I think.
Really?
Manila.
I was thinking like Manila.
Like a Manila folder.
Yeah. Isn't that a place? Is that really dumb? I'm bad at geography.
It is a place in the Philippines.
Thank God. I was nervous to say it. We're really bad at geography.
You think he's Filipino?
That's what I mean. I was like, is it Manila a place? That makes more sense as Manila. Manila.
He's like a mini Godzilla.
What would you call a tiny Godzilla with big eyebrows that can't do shit until he really needs to? We'll get to that. What would you call him?
Little Godzilla.
We love this as a name just anyway, but I think he should be called Little Stomper. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just L-I-L dash and then Stomper, P-A at the end, not P-E-R. Stomper. Little Stomper.
Yeah.
Can I call him that? I don't want to call him Manila.
Okay. I want to talk about Manila later though.
Yeah,
I
mean, we'll get back to Manila. Later. There's a lot to talk about. So it's fully, what more do you want from a monster movie than you're 10 minutes in and like a random voice is being like, Godzilla is attacking New York City. Rodan is invading Moscow. Mothra is laying waste to Beijing. It's... fucking awesome.
Of course Godzilla gets New York City. He's so like, good. I'm the main character. I'm going to get New York City.
And again, the whole time. So we watched this whole movie and I'm like, how does a franchise get from where it started to where it is now?
I mean, there's eight films in between.
There are. But I was even looking into the film that followed Godzilla, and that one equally, the conflict is Godzilla fighting another monster, which is what we associate with.
They sold out immediately.
These kaiju movies is, you know, the idea of like, which monster is facing down. One of the things we asked people in the audience at the marathon was like, you know, which monster is your fave? Like what's your favorite like team up? What's your favorite fight? Like it's again, just like another green queen that we love, just like the Brat Summer, Godzilla encapsulates all. Godzilla can be both a slay, silly, messy bitch, and also full of pathos.
Yeah.
You know, it can do it all, which is what we love. Destroy All Monsters, fully the plot is the humans discovering that there is an alien race called the Killax who were trying to take
over. They have remote control over all the monsters. So they let the monsters escape. The monsters lay waste to all the major cities or whatever.
Mm.
And our good guys in Japan are like, why aren't they attacking Japan? What's going on? And eventually the aliens are like, we just did that to distract you while we're doing all this crazy shit to Japan and we're going to take over humanity and stuff. It's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Like they can brainwash humans as well.
So again, it avoids the thing that, you know, we talk about a lot with these kaiju movies is like you spend a lot of time with human characters, especially if you're doing the more 1954 Godzilla route of like you really want to build up the tension of the monster and focus more on the bureaucracy. Like the 2014 American Godzilla got really criticized for like the human characters being really boring, which I think is like partly true. But this film, it makes the human stuff fucking hilarious. So you're also happy for it.
There's a lot of boring stuff. There's not enough monsters for a movie called Destroy All Monsters.
Yes, true. Good human stuff, as you said, Invasion of the Body Snatchers moment. They're talking, essentially there is two good guys that are introduced on like the monster land station who seem sort of brainwashed. And one of them is being investigated in a room and he's not answering any questions. And then he walks over to a window and he just steps out of it, which is one of your favorite things in movies, Eliza, is when a human falls off a cliff or anything high and then it becomes a dummy.
I really love it. It just makes me like, I can't not laugh at it. It's so funny.
It was great. And then he just gets up on the beach.
Yeah. So it's that Killak power.
Yeah. That Killak stuff. Do it. And there's a really bland shootout. The really boring scene is they go to the moon to like break the moon, lunar base. Again, just boring plot mechanic stuff. And then
Act Three.
Like one of the best times I've ever had in a cinema. Of again, like we have done so many of these marathons at the Astor.
And I really think this is the biggest reaction I've
heard.
This was
the funnest, like, oh, this, it made me be like, I'd love to watch this at like with friends at a party or something. But it was so fun to do with an audience where like, anytime someone called out anything like that, I thought it was so fun. Like
because what happens?
What happens is all the monsters have to unite because the aliens are whipping out the big guy. They are bringing an alien dragon.
Ghidorah.
King Ghidorah.
But it's like a synthetic Ghidorah.
Is he like a space?
I don't know, because you'd seen Ghidorah before. So seemingly they were like, hey, we can like 3D print one of them and he's our guy that we're sending in.
So it's all of the monsters versus King Ghidorah.
Oh my God.
And it's like so good.
You have Kumonga, who is like a spider guy. Yeah. And okay, another complaint I have about this movie, Mothra is in it, but she's in her larval stage the whole time.
Yeah.
She never turns into a moth. She's always just like a goober. But there,
they reject on the feminine side energy
of the fight, and they're just like spraying jizz on Ghidorah, spraying some like pollen on him.
I forgot about this. So initially, Mothra and another one are spraying the spider. Sorry, they're spraying jizz on it, and you're like, it must be like acid jizz or something. But then once the fight is over,
they like do it in celebration, and you're like, were you guys like helping the fight, or were you just doing that out of excitement and arousal?
Was that help, or was that you guys just getting off to the fight?
It didn't seem like it did anything to Ghidorah.
It's so good.
Also useless, Rodan. Fuck Rodan. You don't belong in Monster Land.
How are you going to be the flying monster that can get shit done, and you just don't do anything?
Angirin, whatever. He's ugly, but he was useful. He did a good job. He was actually like the, you know, Godzilla's right hand man.
The ones that you think won't be able to do anything really turn
Goro
up for the
useless
fight.
Like you're just basically a T-Rex and you like didn't do any biting or anything.
Yeah, the
really.
T-Rex one is
but
lazy.
The fight is so funny. Like Godzilla is just like in a very human way like kicking
stomping
Godzilla, I mean Ghidorah, in the stomach. It's so funny.
And we finally get to talk about this is something that like it never stopped being funny, but like
the uselessness of Manila,
you know, the this wasn't the Manila part.
We'll get to Manila.
Wanted to talk about, you know, the joke with, you know this well, Anthony, you've done it for our show many times. You know the like air horn joke where it's like one sound effect, but you just like play it a bunch of times.
Oh, I think I'm familiar.
Yeah, where it's just like, do. Like it just cuts itself off. Every monster has one sound effect.
They'll be like, rah, 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 spider. It's so funny.
Like, I just find it so funny. Godzilla's roar has a specific melody to it. It goes like, and like,
that it means cut off in the middle. When it's like,
and every time it's so funny to me to just imagine the sound guy in the room just like spamming a button.
It's also, it's almost like as well, the movie knows how amazing this whole bit is. So even once the gang has defeated Ghidorah, the aliens are like, we're going to send in our final, our last ditch effort or whatever. And it's this stupid fucking like blob of paint that they're like, the fire dragon. And it's so half-assed. They're like, they just wanted to keep this going. That they like threw in a literal shape they for Godzilla to keep kicking.
To keep us here. They wanted us to just like not leave this place yet.
I just wanted the fire dragon to get lost. I was like, no.
It's, and as you said, you've just seen like all these hilarious like people in suits literally fucking shit up. And then like the still image of a fiery like dragon shape is supposed to be like the big bad and we do not care.
Okay. Go home.
All of which is also to say like, again, we're talking about these extreme tonal shifts and how fun, as in between films, and how fun and fascinating they are. But it's not even like, you know, oh, it's moving away from the original vision of what we did. Like, this film is directed by Ishiro Honda.
Same bloke.
Like, he was also making and, like, made loads. He made Godzilla vs. Kong and, you know, Mothra and, like, all these things before this film as well.
That can still mean it moves extremely far away from the original. Like, I feel like it is.
Oh, totally.
Like, in plot, it is completely the opposite, where it's basically set in a utopia. The world is perfect, and the thing that threatens it is not human nature, but literally Deus Ex Machina, evil Deus Ex Machina, like aliens coming to Earth and ruining this perfect world we have. And it's like, that is complete escapism, as opposed to Godzilla being like, we created this and now we are being like, we have to take a sober look at what we've done and how to fix it.
Yeah.
In this, it's like, oh boy, something terrible's happening to our fun little Thunderbirds Island.
Good thing we're perfect at fixing problems when they happen as a species. But again, thematically, I think,
to be fair, don't you think that like most Avengers movies are like that? I mean,
totally.
Like, sure, I'm aware of them having moments as they progress of taking accountability and being frowned upon by people for like the destruction they're complicit in and stuff. But I feel like
they seem to think the status quo.
I feel like particularly in lots of the earlier origin stories and things, they kind of do imply a perfect world.
Yes.
Well, I guess they don't directly.
I think what you're speaking to though is why this franchise is so sacred and the longest running, because what you're talking about is actually like a cultural difference that creates a different relationship to what escapism can be. Because in the MCU, I see that idealism as like almost propaganda. Like I see the MCU
more conservative.
As being, it feels like it's being like, this is the story we tell about ourselves, sit down and shut up. Whereas Godzilla, like this film, the way Godzilla moves to these places, it isn't being like, oh, we're getting away from the root of what Godzilla is. It's about saying, this is where we currently choose this year to connect to this symbol and what it means to us.
And 8 films on, and it's like, yeah, it is a more optimistic society.
But I also just don't think it's saying like, oh no, like we're losing sight of the fact that we need to like,
it's not a dilution of the movie, the original movie's whole thing though.
But I'm not disagreeing with that, but I'm saying it doesn't feel implied that we're never going to go back to that place. It's saying
it's really malleable if you feel like it can go back to that.
Yeah, I think I think there's something really beautiful about something that's initially a symbol of this like, and remains a symbol of this like horrible trauma that gets to exist in these different spaces that isn't about denying, that isn't about like repressing the history, even though I know that that is, you know, we'll talk next week about the themes of Return of Godzilla are very much about like like repressing history or about living in denial.
Like, do not forget past atrocities.
Yeah. Do you feel like the, you know, wrestling match nature of this style of kaiju film is, even though it's fun to indulge, morally tricky? I guess I can only watch it in the hindsight of finding it kind of beautiful, finding it kind of nice to like take a symbol and let it have all these different meanings.
I love it. I don't think it's problematic or there's anything wrong with it. I just think like, yeah, as our interview subject was saying a few minutes ago, like the first movie had so much substance and this has none.
This film is about people in suits, like fighting and kicking
and glittery
each other.
Aliens.
I think that is its own reckoning with that thing.
Well, being like the atom bomb is now our buddy and savior.
No.
We love him.
No, being like we let our symbol of the atom bomb also be like take on this new meaning.
I think it's
in this
interesting in hindsight, but I don't think Toho was thinking about that at the time, being like, we're going to give the audience just what they want, those fools, and it's going to say a lot about.
Like, but I don't think we think about the symbol, like what we're making of the symbol while we're making it. Like it happens outside of us, you know? I think it like happens without you driving it necessarily. And like what makes this so long running is that it doesn't feel like there's some sort of subconscious, insidious agenda the way like an MCU film makes me feel.
Mm.
It makes me feel like genuinely where a people sit with an idea at a point in time.
And it is
I do think you're very right though that there's some hindsight element that lets me go because it's gotten to exist in all these different flavors throughout time. It's like
fun.
The Bond. We actually talked about this. It's like the Bond films where like
they have waves of silliness and then they return to being gritty and bleak and stern.
Which all, but again, even still, Bond is the sort of symbol that like there's not ever some like super moral, clean perspective inside those shifts. Whereas Godzilla to me, I'm always like, because it comes from this place of hurt, because it comes from like the origin point of it is this like unimaginable cultural pain.
Mm.
The different ways it gets to exist to me are always about some sort of like catharsis, you know?
And we wouldn't be here and we wouldn't have these warm feelings towards Godzilla if they'd made 8 really sad reckonings about Hiroshima or whatever.
Absolutely.
And the movies did, like from the first movie, Godzilla and like kaiju movies had a big child and family audience.
Yes.
And with that,
yes.
Can we please talk about Godzilla's child?
Little Stomper.
Manila, Little Stomper. Manila to me, I could talk about this for an hour. Manila to me is very Bobby Hill coded, where his dad is like this stern, angry man, and that boy ain't right. Like he is just like a little flamboyant. He's real like he looks much more like a human baby that's like bluey gray. That's like crazy ugly eyebrows.
It has these fat eyebrows.
Yeah. But before we bully him too much, did you know he's a preemie? He's a premature baby. That's why he looks like that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. He's overcome so much.
Yeah. Apparently we got to watch this. We fucking have to watch Son of Godzilla.
We must.
But apparently in it, it's like there's an egg that he's in and giant praying mantises crack him out of it early. So
well, there you go. That explains it.
But Manila is extremely hated in the Godzilla fan community. And I was like, I've never understood why he has this sort of scrappy do kind of reputation. And so I literally just Googled Manila hate into Google. Do you want to hear what some people have had to say about Lil Stomper, our beloved? Someone said, fucker looks like my nutsack. Someone said, it became way too kiddie. It's hard to believe what we saw in the 1954 movie compared to this little idiot.
So he is a symbol of this shift.
Of it becoming more for kids, becoming more kawaii, more lovable.
Mm.
Someone said, same scenario with Ice Age Baby. I hate it. It's like, oh, the Ice Age Baby.
Who hates the baby from Ice Age?
Oh my God, look up Ice Age Baby. People hate that
Isn't
kid.
It just like Boo from Monsters, Inc. or something?
He's
I don't
much
know,
more
Ice
annoying,
Age.
The Ice Age Baby.
We have to stop having okay, so it used to be like people would be like, oh, Shrek, like best movie ever made thing. You know? Yeah. And they're like, yeah, cool, we'll grow up with Shrek. Films that now get that rep,
people
and
like,
I'm like,
Over the Hedge.
It's like, I was about, I'm sorry.
You're a child.
I can't have it with Over the Hedge. I cannot have it with Brother Bear. I can't have it with Ice Age.
Sorry, are you saying that you've heard people say that Over the Hedge is one of the best movies ever?
Well, people will just be like, oh my God, no, you know that
Iconic.
Thing where we all culturally have a spot in our heart for Over the Hedge? And you're like, girl.
Maybe.
The Wild. Oh my God, I love The Wild.
I mean, maybe like with the exception of the bit where the squirrel, the chipmunk drinks all the soft drink.
And then life is in slow motion.
Yeah, saves the day.
Okay, maybe it is an important cultural touch.
I'm going to try and guess some of the voice cast.
You know it. Hedge.
I really, really don't. Can you mention some of the, I know one
There's
is a squirrel.
Cool raccoon.
A cool raccoon. No, Jason Bateman. He hadn't really
Older. 80s action star.
Oh, really? 80s action star. Not Tom Cruise, a bit big. Like a Keanu Reeves.
No.
I'm
not talking about Manila. What are
Chris
we doing?
Chris O'Donnell.
No.
Okay, is like Christina Applegate in it or something?
No, maybe. I don't know.
Who's the main squirrel guy?
That's Steve Carell.
Really?
Yeah.
Who's the raccoon then?
It's Bruce Willis.
Oh, that makes
and
sense.
Avril Lavigne is the girl possum, which
that,
was...
Yeah, that sounds
okay,
memorable.
Over the Hedge is like really
really
important.
Great, guys. I'm like, guys, why do we talk about Over the Hedge so much and proceed to try to list the voice cast?
No, but I get what you mean. It's like the next generation growing up and thinking their things are good, but they're wrong.
And I'm like, yeah, like, guys, where is the Mars Needs Mums conversation? We need to be having it. Sorry, continue. Manila, disgusting Godzilla baby.
I actually only had one more comment that someone made. Yes. They just said, when someone asked, I think on Reddit, like, why do people hate Manila so much? They just said, ugly. So they just body shame him for being premature baby.
They do. I feel like this film though, I don't know how he does it in Son of Godzilla, but this film almost anticipated and rode the wave of how the audience felt about him.
Yeah.
In the most, it was the moment of the marathon to me, which is the whole film is-
They're like, Godzilla's in Sector 1 and Manila is also there. And Manila will be like playing with some dirt and you're like- This fucking kid.
He's just in the background of every shot, gently sort of like swaying side to side, like uncomfortable at a party,
and
not knowing how to get
like,
in there. Can't do anything, can't contribute at all. And you're like, dude, why are you even here? They should just throw Manila at Ghidorah.
During the fight, anytime you see him, it's just in the far distance, sort of like pumping his arms in the air, like, get him, Dad, yeah, woo! Like applauding.
And you're like, oh my God, he can't help at all. And then... out of nowhere, his first contribution ever is to emit
a laser halo
energy beam that decapitates one of King Ghidorah's heads.
He sort of like sends it over like, and it snaps off Ghidorah's, like his three heads. It snaps off one of them.
He's like, oh, by the way, I can do this. Like true Jack from The Incredible style. Like not only are you not just a baby, also you could have done this by yourself without moving.
Yeah.
It's
maybe
so
he's only
funny.
Got like one in him every day or something.
Oh, it's so funny. Just for
when are they going to do a sequel that unpacks their family dynamic though?
I know. Well, we need to just watch Son of Godzilla.
I think
as well
you're right that the whole family dynamic would very much be the thing of like, you know, Godzilla wants him to get into sports and like he keeps practicing, but like he can't catch the ball and he kind of wants to go to dance tryout sort of thing.
It's Billy Elliot.
It's Billy Elliot.
Manila Elliot.
What does he say? I wanted to ballet.
Boys do something.
Football,
boxing,
not ballet. Not ballet.
Yeah, that's what Godzilla would say.
I want to emit energy ray beams. I want to do it. For a friend, I think a perfect indication of the shift in tone is that it's really interesting to hear about the performance style of having people in suits be quite a, you know, a thing that someone hadn't done before and possibly could be tacky, but that by studying going to the zoo and studying the movements of animals, particularly of gorillas, the Godzilla like suit performer gauged that if you make like sort of shuffling movements with the body and you really think about the like air resistance upon the, yeah, but like if you were that big, what the resistance of the air would be.
Yeah, he said like at the zoo, he noticed the bigger the animals got, the less they picked up their feet.
Yeah, to shuffle around. And that is really successful in the first film. And then in this film, it's literally like they'll be like, how are we going to show that was a good hit? And the cat, like two people in monster suits will do a hit. They'll essentially like look at each other, do a thumbs up and like wink. Power Rangers style. it's amazing.
They're
it takes
evolving.
You all around the world in two films. So yeah, I feel like it was the best time ever.
It was the best of times.
It was. Did you did you like expect to feel that way about this movie, I guess? Like, I think it had a really strong finish, which meant that at first it was fun. And
I was,
it was
disappointed
great.
When it was going into granular detail about the alien plan and I don't know. But it is perfectly balanced by the end of it, by that fight
scene. And in next week's two films, as we continue our Midnight Marathon.
We got another goofy one and then we got a return.
We do.
Come now. It's time to get serious once again.
So I feel like we're going to have a version of the same assessments but with different kaiju, with different different bureaucratic nightmares, different eras just in general of the Toho legacy.
Yeah.
This was the best. And thank you again for listening. Yeah. And anyone that went to Myth, like we're hoping that there's some friends that were at the marathon with us that probably saw us stumbling around trying to get some thoughts from people. We'd love to hear your thoughts on, I think my favorite to ask people was who their favorite kaiju was, like who they most, or who you most align with, you know. There are ones that I'm like, you can't do anything in a fight, but like I kind of feel the same.
You look cool.
You look cool. You look very cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll check in with you next week for part two of this little
Godzilla-thon.
Stomper Godzilla-thon. That episode will be a part of our Patreon, which remember, if you're a patron of the show,
that's where you get your good conversation starters.
You'll never be stuck conversation-wise ever again. So you can hop on over there for next week's episode. You can follow us on Letterboxd, Facebook, Instagram. And we'll see you for part two next week. Can we? I was going to say, can we both make a sound?
Oh no, oh no.
That's going to get spam buttoned.
Can you do that, Anthony?
Oh yeah.
Do they have the technology to do that yet?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, they did it. Those crazy bastards.
Do you have one in mind?
What kind of monster? Are we us or what kind of monster am I? What kind of monster do you think I am? Like, give me an animal and I'll, you know. Like an animal that you make a kaiju version of and I'll do it.
Oh no, oh no. Oh.
I feel like we're Australian, so we should have some sort of like.
Well, you can be like a great kangaroo, but it's
a kangaroo.
Its tail is a snake.
Oh, okay. That was pretty good actually. I kind of like that. I thought I would hate it when it came out, but I'm like, that's that. I can hear that.
Can I be a cat?
You're a magpie.
All right. So my sound would be.
And I just want to hear those sounds.
They're fighting. Oh no. We have to destroy all monsters. They're here beating each other up.
He's down. How are we? I need a
Manila,
energy ray.
Get in here. Yeah.
Help Manila.
Little nutsack.
Stop watching. Use a beam to cut off her head.